have to be $10,000 and come right out of your paycheck. No, it can be $5. It can be $6. It can be $10. It can be what works best for you. It can be the thing that can make you a part of the community, and yet at the same time, you can give to something that's been around for 46 years and being the voice for the voiceless, and we're asking you to do that right now. That number is 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm. It's that easy, my friends. And Dell, it's all yours.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you so much for all of you that are about to call or have called right now. Well, guess what? You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is your favorite radio station. And right coming up, it's your favorite radio program. That's Rose City Native Radio. So stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Sings Out, a benefit concert for the Yes on Measure 92 campaign. On Sunday, October 12th at 5 p.m., a diverse collection of Portland musicians will be putting on an evening of revitalized protest classics and creative original songs of revolution. Performers include Zia McCabe and Courtney Taylor-Taylor of the Dandy Warhols, Jeremy Wilson of the Dharma Bums, KBOO's Mike Crenshaw, and many, many more. Again, Portland Sings Out will take place Sunday, October 12th from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Judy Berry, Earth First and labor activist on the need to support community radio.
Well, I guess I just want to say for the pledge drive to support your public radio stations. Down where I live, the public radio stations KMUD and KZYX have been really important organizing tools for us to even have a movement, for us to get information out that isn't filtered by the corporations. Public radio is a really precious thing, and I think that everybody should support it. So if you want to hear stuff like this on the radio, send in your money and keep it going.
Thank you, Judy. You're listening to KBOO, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from U.S. Agencies Credit Union, providing local banking resources since 1936 and proudly serving Native Americans and their families. Details at usacu.org.
You're listening to Rose City Native Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Today, we have a lot in store for you, as well as the fall membership drive. We will have our interview with Miss Laura Reagan, Native historian. This will be part one of a two-part series. We'll be playing the second part next week. In the news today, Eradicating Offensive Native Masculinity has released a press release in regards to the Nike N7 Sports Summit after a Redskins-themed party. The Nike N7 Sports Summit is this weekend, starting today, I believe. In the press release, they say, Eradicating Offensive Native Masculinity, a group of Native parents and their allies from across the Turtle Island urged Nike Inc. and those attending the N7 Sports Summit to acknowledge and support the grassroots efforts of Native American families to end racism in sports, especially racism against Native Americans displayed by the NFL's Washington team, the Cleveland Indians, and Kansas City Chiefs, and the Atlanta Braves. It is more important than ever that Nike demonstrate support for Native American families, particularly after Nike's insulting racial slur-themed birthday party last week for National Basketball Association player Kevin Durant. Nike can no longer continue to ignore American Psychological Association findings and claim to support and include Native Americans as people rather than marketable images or consumers from which they make a profit. Nike Inc. has demonstrated that part of what they want Native American families to do is trade in their identity for inclusion, because they want to sell culturally marketable shoe and other merchandises to Native Americans, and yet we still sell Chief Wahoo, Tomahawk Chop, FSU, Chiefs, and Washington football team gear for profit as well. We may be consumers, but our culture has been a mass marketing commodity for far too long and is an exploitation that is doing measurable harm to the self-worth of Native children. Nike must support Native Americans speaking out against Native masketry in sports, and otherwise it looks like all the good N7 is doing is making more mascots for us to fight. That is a form of bribery and nothing new, and looks much like Dan Snyder's original Americans Foundation. Eradicating Offensive Native Mascotry is planning to protest the N7 event this weekend. For more information, you can go to facebook.com/masketry, that's MASCOTRY, or go to their website, which is eonm.org. And again, coming up on the show, we have the wonderful Laura Reagan. But first, we are going to maybe hear from our pitchers here in just a sec.
Yes, thank you, Jackie. And I'm Del, and I'm here with Paul. And both of us are contributors behind the scenes of Rose City Native Radio. And we are so pleased to actually be here and contribute to this show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Yeah, this is really exciting, being involved in this. We've had Native American programming here on KBOO for, I don't know, what is it, 40 years? John Telly was started out long way back when. And I'm sure there's listeners out there who still remember John and all the other Native American programmers over the years. And now we've got Jackie, who brings a fresh voice, youthful perspective. And, you know, I'm just wondering, like, you know, we do this stuff on KBOO. You know, I do various programs, and Del does Bread and Roses, and other people do stuff. You know, it's always curious who is actually out there listening to the program. I mean, we know people are listening. Obviously, people are listening, and people do call up and give us support. But we'd really like to hear from you. You know, do you appreciate this programming? Do you appreciate what you're hearing during this hour of Native news and music and opinion and interviews that comes to you every week, week in and week out? So, you know, give us a call, 877-500-5266, and let us know what you think, and let us have some of your money at the same time.
Oh, yes, because really we haven't been able to do any of this without the support and contribution of listeners like you. Yes, I'm talking to you, and you know what? I used to be like you and not donate to KBOO, but now I do. And the reason why I do it, it's because, you know, this is where I get my information. Not only, you know, we just finished listening to Democracy Now, an entire hour of news, and now we have Native programming. Did you guys know, actually, that the N7 Summit was happening this weekend? Did you know, in fact, that they were planning to boycott that event? Well, if you didn't know, if that's a piece of information you learned here on KBOO, thanks to Jackie Malmstrom, and thanks to the other volunteers that are here providing you this information, then it is your duty to, in fact, pick up the phone and call and make your contribution, 877-500-5266. But maybe you're driving right now, so please pull over before you call. Maybe you're kind of a shy person and you are in front of your computer, so KBOO.FM is where you want to go ahead and donate. And, you know, maybe you want to stop by. Maybe you want to meet Jackie. Maybe you get some feedback for her. Maybe you want to meet all of you here, volunteers that are waiting patiently for your call. And we are located 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. I see somebody by the door. Maybe this person's about to walk in. Please do the same. Or call us, 877-500-5266.
Yeah, give us a call. Like I said, we'd really like to meet you. You know, to us, we all kind of get to see each other and hang out with each other and talk to each other
and
get to know each
other.
And but we'd like to interact more with you. Phone calls are good. So there's several volunteers I can see right behind me who are at the phones, ready and waiting to pick up your phone call at 877-500-5266. You know, the sooner you call, why wait? Why wait? The sooner you call, the sooner you can contribute, and we can continue with our programming. But please do give us that call right now, 877-500-5266. This is really exciting. This is cutting edge radio. I've been, you know, really ever since I've sort of turned the reins over to Dell, mostly for the engineering on this program, I've been listening carefully to the shows, and it's really exciting what Jackie's got going here. And so right now, let's go back to the program and then give us a call.
So some of you may have caught The Daily Show last week, which featured a native panel of activists, including friends of the show Greg Deal and the 1491s, along with others, including Amanda Blackhorse, the lead plaintiff that got the Washington football team's trademark revoked. Now, there's been a lot of drama before this segment aired on Thursday with one of the they had a panel of Washington football team supporters. And one of those was a lady by the name of, we'll just call her Miss Odell. And she went to a lot of news reporters, news sites and things, saying that, you know, she felt threatened and afraid, and the natives were accusing her of all sorts of horrible things, and they wouldn't let her speak. And she was so frightened, in fact, that she called the police. She had left the recording in tears, and she had called the police, and the police had told her that there had been no crime committed. Now, before, you know, anyone had seen this clip, it sounds terrifying. You know, you have a group of Native American activists who have been fighting this name for a very long time, and you have a group of steadfast fans of this name. And you bring them together, of course, it's going to get a little heated. And you know, according to some of the panelists on the Native side, it did get a little heated. But unfortunately, before anybody had even seen the footage, this had already blown up with Miss Odell's testimony saying that she was crying and shaking and afraid because no one was letting her talk. The Native panel was very aggressive, and she was afraid. Again, she was afraid. And she was afraid she was going to be defamed. She called the police, everything. So this story gets around. The story has been almost gone viral, I want to say. But it has only been from the panelists' side. And by the panelists, I mean the Washington football team panelists. No one has really gone to the Native panelists before this. They had one quote from Amanda Blackhorse, and I think one quote from Tara Huska as well, but they repeated the same quote in every single article. Some sites have been using that terminology of the wild Indian ambush on the poor Washington football fans, you know, this crazy Indian ambush, and that's not what it was at all, as we saw on Thursday. Nobody seemed to reach out to the rest of the panelists, and there were at least, let's see, 8 panelists there that they could have talked to, and nobody reached out to these people. So it had begun this large drama involved with the taping, and, you know, many people were very nervous about how this was going to be portrayed, myself included. A lot, you know, not all, but some of them focused more on the mean, scary natives ambushing the poor Washington football team fans. You know, took the story and ran with it, took one woman's word and ran with it and took it as gospel before anyone had even seen the clip. And then now that it's come out on Thursday, everyone sees that it wasn't exactly as that woman, as Miss Odell, had described. And it was a lot more civil. She's standing in a room with a lot of calm natives who are trying to talk to her. At one point, you do see her crying, and I believe it's Bobby Wilson, who is always classy as ever, hands her his handkerchief, and there is a handshake as well. And now that this footage has been out, some of the native panelists have begun to speak out and write about their experiences on The Daily Show, because what they didn't show was they took the 1491s to a Washington football team tailgate party. And unfortunately, they only aired the part with Jason Jones and did not show what the 1491s ended up going through. Magazine Personnel from the 1491s wrote out an article
speaking about his experience, and they unfortunately were not able to use this footage, and it's possible they were not able to use the footage because it was so volatile. McZee writes that, you know, as they walked to the tailgate, people were blowing smoke in their face. A man yelled, "Thanks for letting us use your name." People would yell at them to go the F home. And as he was waiting in line for the bathroom, he was wearing his Caucasians shirt, which is a parody of the Chief Wahoo logo and is basically a white man with a dollar sign behind his head to look like a feather, and it says Caucasians on it. A white woman came up to him and asked him, "Is that shirt supposed to be funny?" And, you know, she then told him, "I will effing cut you." She had two very angry-looking white men behind her, and she threatened him with physical violence over a t-shirt. You know, it was just one thing after another with these fans who, they didn't even talk to them. It was the second they saw Indians at this tailgate, it was immediately game on. It was anger. It was pure rage just at the sight of Native Americans. Unfortunately, it did not air, but this is something that happened. And, you know, McZee said that he was actually afraid for his life. And I don't blame him. Walking into the lion's den like that is extremely scary. And so now, thankfully, there have been some interviews with Tara Hoska as well as McZee and others slowly coming out now with their side of the story. And a lot more people are realizing that this panel of natives was not as aggressive as this woman and the news made them out to be. So why is it that people tend to go immediately for the Indian ambush when it comes to things like this? Why does that get flipped so easily? Why is it so easy to believe that a group of native activists, which include artists, lawyers, all of these people have degrees. These are very well-educated people. Yet when the articles of this came out before the show came out, it was more just a wild band of Indians came in and called these people racists. And they were aggressive and rude and made a poor white lady cry. When on the other side, you have three Native men walking into this tailgate party with a camera crew. And even though there's a camera crew there, it does not stop these people from threatening them, from saying horrible things to them, and just being absolutely despicable. And yet no one really decided to cover that. They decided to cover the white tears instead. And we really have to wonder why that is. Why is it more important? I guess it can be best described by McZee himself when he says, "I think back to the tailgate. The man blowing cigar smoke in my face. The man who mockingly yelled, 'Thanks for letting us use your name.' The group who yelled at us to go the F home. The woman who threatened to cut me. The dude who blew the train horn on his truck as I walked by the hood. I think of all of that, and I think back to Odell crying and trying desperately to get out of a room full of calm natives. I thought she was crying because she was caught unawares and was afraid, but I realized that was her defense mechanism, and that by overly dramatizing her experience, she continued to trivialize ours. It was privilege in action, and I realized these things, and something else became incredibly clear. She knew she was wrong." We're now going to listen to one of my favorite clips from this segment, and it's pretty much self-explanatory. So, enjoy.
"My great-great-grandfather's full-blood Cherokee Indian." "Show of hands, who has Cherokee or any Native American? Brian, what do you got in you?"
"Cherokee, but I have no idea how much or little."
"Right.
I'm actually 112th.
112th Cherokee.
As 112th Cherokee, I am not offended."
Coming up next, we have part one of our two-part series interview with Native historian Laura Reagan. We'll be listening to that after these messages from our friends over there, Paul and Mike. How you doing, guys?
Doing good. Paul, what's up?
I'm great. I'm really digging this show. This is really good, Jackie.
Yeah, man, it's good to be back down here. I had to leave the building for a minute, but I understand we're raising a lot of money, and I appreciate what you're doing. Jackie Delphine, keeping people tuned in. You know, that's what's up, bringing the issues to folks that are not going to be brought to them anywhere else. And I'm here to support that effort. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. We need more members. We need more listeners. So I want everybody out there in the community to not only contribute to KBOO by picking up the phone and giving us a call and making a monthly donation, whether it's $5, $6, $7, whatever it is, whatever you can afford to give. Even those of us who are fortunate to be able to give like $30 a month, that would come out to like $360 a year or a lump sum. But I want you to influence other folks in your community, in your circle, your friends, your family, your peers, to not only tune into KBOO, but to support KBOO financially and keep it around. And that would be a good thing.
Yeah, and we want to thank Mikey. Thank Mikey, who's renewing from Gresham. And also some people who gave online earlier today: Alexandra from Portland, Alan from Damascus, Todd from Milwaukee, and who said, if you want to get a viewpoint of current events other than mainstream media, this is the place to get it. KW from Portland and Valerie from McMinnville. Those are all people who gave online, which you can do too by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. That's the way to do it online. And by phone, it's 877-500-5266. Get in touch with our volunteers who are standing by right behind me and Mike Crenshaw, eagerly waiting for you to call and express your appreciation for Rose City Native Radio and all the other programming that you hear on KBOO Community Radio.
Indeed, man. These are important times we live in. And, you know, the voice of Rose City Native Radio and the voices that Rose City Native Radio brings to the air are voices that need to be heard. There's a lot of stuff on the dial that has absolutely nothing to do with voices that need to be heard, that have a lot to do with voices that we hear far too much of and far too limited of a perspective. So when you support KBOO, what you're supporting is a perspective that's an accurate reflection of the world we actually live in, not just a reflection of the 1% in their interests. And if you call us, somebody will be happy to talk to you. We can work out something where we have an electronic funds transfer, painlessly bring out donation, a contribution to KBOO on a monthly basis. A little bit of money goes a long way. If you think about it, $5 a month. I don't even know how that breaks down, how many cents that is a day, but I know periodically I'll spend $5 on a coffee drink or something. You know what I'm saying? So yearly, that's $60. And all those contributions help support our staff, volunteers, members, and listeners. And if you're in the area on this beautiful evening going in the dusk, you can walk into 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and say hello to us and get acquainted with the station if you're not already familiar with us. 877-500-5266, KBOO.FM.
Yeah, you know, we really can't say enough that if all the people who listen to KBOO gave even just 10 or 20 bucks, all the people listen to KBOO, I mean, why can't we make that happen? Don't wait for somebody else to do it. You know, it's like if we just spread it around, that's the whole message of what we're trying to do here at KBOO, spread things around, join collectively to make this thing happen. And that's what really hoping that people really take way more seriously. You know, this is really important to really, it's like we've gotten away from the corporate model. We've gotten away from like depending on big foundations. You know, this is a tried and true, this is ever since Lou Hill started Pacifica, you know, you've probably heard this history. Back in the 1940s, this is a workable model, but we want to make it even more workable. We want to make it even more democratic, even more participatory. We want people to call in 877-500-5266 and support us. But with, you know, it doesn't really matter how much. Just give us a call and express your appreciation right now.
Indeed. Let's take it back to Jackie and Delphine whenever you guys are ready. Thank you for supporting KBOO to all our listeners and all our members.
I'm here with Laura Reagan. Laura, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Laura, for the folks out there at home, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, I am an enrolled member of the Lipa Apache Tribe of Texas, and I have a master's in U.S. history from Indiana University. I also received my bachelor's there, and I study contact era and the roles of women and men in the contact of European, mostly the Spanish, and, you know, how, particularly how women affected contact and colonization.
So what made you decide to study history?
I have always loved history as long as I can remember. I was a very early reader as a child. I was fortunate enough to have a stay-at-home mother, and she is an avid reader still. She taught me how to read very young, and I remember in fourth grade, I won my school's Indiana History Quiz Bowl, and I was quite proud of that accomplishment. And so I guess I should have always known that I was going to end up being a historian. You know, I started studying Native history for a couple of reasons, you know, one being the fact that you know, a lot of historians who study Native history are not Native themselves, and so we have a lot of this outside perspective looking in, and I really wanted to give the history an insider's perspective, you know, and because, you know, we all have our own lenses in which we view things, mine being that of a Native person, and so I felt like I could bring a different perspective to the field and the study of history. And so that was one of the biggest reasons why I decided to study history and Native history in particular.
So as a Native historian and a mother of two with children in public school, have you had any issues in regards to their education, you know, around Thanksgiving time or when they learn about, you know, the founding of this country?
Well, yeah, thankfully I live in an area of Indiana that is very open-minded and very very good about wanting to teach children correctly. Of course, they're still coming home with things that are wrong. And, you know, their experience, I feel like, is a lot different than my experience growing up in further north in Indiana. You know, my experience was definitely as, you know, one of the only brown kids in my classroom and, you know, coming, I grew up almost like I lived in two worlds. I had this Native world at home where we ate different foods and had different humor and different ways of saying things and doing things. And then I have this world outside of my home that was the white world. And, you know, and when I would raise my hand to speak up when my teacher would say things like, well, Indians lived in teepees. And I would raise my hand to say, well, my ancestors also lived in Wikiups. I was told that I was wrong. Whereas, you know, my kids, thankfully, live in an area where when they do speak up and say, well, I was taught this, the teachers are more apt to listen to them. And my son last year, I was so proud of him. You know, his teacher was talking about Native Americans, and he spoke up and started speaking in Apache to his teacher. And his teacher was so excited, she actually took him around to all of the other fifth grade classrooms so they could hear what an indigenous language sounded like. So I'm really glad that my kids go to a school where that kind of thing is more embraced. And also their schools have had me come into the classroom and talk to the kids about Native Americans and about, you know, the real truth of Thanksgiving and Columbus and modern Native people and all of that. And I've been asked to talk to several schools in the area, not just my own children's schools, about Native Americans. And I feel really fortunate that, you know, locally people are asking me to do that. And I can keep teaching people around the area, you know, the truth about history and Native people in this country.
School sounds like it's definitely changed since I went. We used to have a Native American principal, but we would still make little paper bag fringe vests for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, my elementary school did that too, and I remember being really mad because they made me dress like a pilgrim. And I said, you know, I wanted to be an Indian because I already was one, and they wouldn't let me. I don't know if it was just so it didn't look racially motivated, but even still, that is racially motivated if they wouldn't let me dress like an Indian because I was one. But the only biggest issue that I've ever had with my children's school was last year, my son Jarek brought home an assignment that was called, like, The Day the Indians Cried. And it was a social studies assignment that he was supposed to read and then answer questions about. It was a story about when the last Indians left Indiana, and they were so sad because they couldn't come back. And it was just horrible. And so I emailed the teacher. I told him not to do the assignment. I emailed the teacher and said, I'm sorry, my son is not doing this assignment. It is wrong, and it is, you know, racist in that it's saying that, basically saying that there's none of us left here. And the teacher apologized by saying, well, I'm sorry, I didn't read the assignment before I assigned it. And I was just like, why on earth would you assign something that you didn't even read? You know, especially knowing, like, she knew full well that, you know, this child in her class had a mother who's a historian and a Native American person who studied Native American people. Like, you know, that kind of blew my mind a little bit, but thankfully she didn't cut him off for not doing the assignment. I was pretty upset about that one. And because also, you know, I don't know how many other kids in that class read that assignment and had totally wrong ideas about Native people. You know, here in Indiana and on the East Coast, because of the Removal Act, there are a lot less, like, the Native population is a lot less visible here than it is west. And So a lot of times my fiance and I will get the what are you question, you know, in regards to our race. And when we tell people we're Native, they'll say, oh, well, I'm an Indian too. You know, my great-great-grandma was Cherokee or whatever. And like, okay, well, you have Native ancestry, but, you know, I have an Armenian ancestor, but I'm not going to walk into an Armenian gathering and say, oh, well, I'm Armenian too. My great-great-grandma was from Armenia, because I don't know anything about Armenian culture or the language or, you know, anything. I just happen to have this one ancestor on my mother's side who was Armenian, you know.
And Laura, I'm just curious, what's the reaction of people and children when you go to classrooms, etc.?
Most of the time, the kids respond pretty positively. I've also spoken to high school and even up into college level classrooms. There's a professor at IU who teaches social work, and she's had me come in several times. I've spoken in classrooms at Ivy Tech, which is a community college here in Indiana. A couple of years ago, I was speaking to a classroom of elementary school students, and my hair was dyed pink at the time. And some of the kids didn't quite know what to think about that, and they asked, well, if you're an Indian, why do you have pink hair? And I said, well, I like pink hair. So I dyed my hair pink, you know, and it does kind of help the kids to, you know, help, I guess, break this mold that they've got in their mind of what an Indian's supposed to look like. This was actually kind of funny. A friend of mine who was attending the community college here, Ivy Tech, and she had an instructor who clearly didn't know what he was talking about, but he was the kind of person that if he didn't know the answer to something, he would just make something up. And he told the class that the reason why some very old depictions of Native people depict them with lighter skin or lighter hair is because some Native people were blonde and light-skinned, which is wrong. And so she told me about this, and she had told her instructor, well, you know, my good friend is a master's student. She studies this. She talks to classrooms. And so he, you know, happily invited me to come and speak to their class. And so I made sure to tell the class while I was, you know, talking to them about, well, actually the reason why, you know, these old images are shown with Native people having light hair is because the drawings were typically sent back to Europe uncolored. And the Europeans who had never seen a Native before would color them in. And so they would color them with blonde hair and light skin or red hair because they didn't know. And so a lot of times, you know, even in the, like, and that instructor himself, you know, when I told the class that, was just like, oh, you know, and it was kind of a little light bulb for him, I guess. And I, you know, hope that if he's still teaching that class that he's not telling his students wrong information and that he's, you know, taking what I've taught the class and him and, you know, teaching that instead.
So last week there was a lot of drama in regards to the Daily Show segment, which featured Native activists and Washington football fans, where one of the Washington football team panelists went around saying that she was ambushed by a group of angry Natives. And people believed that this had happened before they had even seen the footage. And now that we've seen the footage, we know that that's not really what happened. Why do you think that the stereotype of angry ambushing Indians is still believable in this day and age?
Okay, I think that it's definitely still in the psyche of the, you know, American population of this, you know, the savage Indian riding down to the, you know, poor innocent pioneers and, you know, attacking them. And this idea that we're, you know, aggressive and all that. You know, I was recently talking to a friend of mine who is a designer of stained glass windows. She was asked to design a stained glass window that represents, you know, American soldiers in different conflicts, and she, you know, wanted to use a Navajo code talker for to represent the World War II and what my thoughts on that were and all of that. And, you know, I explained to her that, you know, the Apache language is mutually intelligible with the Navajo language, but that when Apache people were wanting to join and assist with the Navajo code talkers, they weren't allowed to because they were still considered a hostile people in the eyes of the American government. You know, and that's as recently as the 1940s. So she decided to use a picture of one of my Apache family members as her face model because she thought that that would be a good way to kind of stick it to the man, I guess you could say. But, you know, she was surprised to hear that. And I think that this whole idea is still very prevalent in the American mind of indigenous people, Native people being aggressive and savage and brutal and violent and And so therefore, when this white woman comes forward and says, well, I felt accosted by these mean Indians, that nobody even questioned, well, what do the natives think of this? What was their side of the story? Nobody even questioned that and just ran with what this woman said. And then, you know, has, like you said, has since come out that what she was saying was not actually how things actually happened, and that, you know, the native people there actually experienced more threatening interactions than the, you know, panel of non-native people did. And, you know, and that kind of idea of the, you know, hostile savage is still, you know, still perpetrated in Hollywood. So I think that that is most likely why her story was never even questioned.
Have you noticed as well that in studying history that the colonizer's side of the story, if you will, is always taken as truth as opposed to maybe the indigenous side of things?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I focus on in my research. One of the main things I focus on is actually sexual assault, because, today in the United States and in Canada, a Native woman is 3 times more likely to be sexually assaulted than a non-Native woman. Most of the people who are the ones doing the assault are non-Native people. And so it's not like a cultural thing within a Native community where these people are being assaulted. It is non-Native people assaulting Native people. You know, what I am researching in my studies is the root of this issue. Why is this the case? And because of the way that Native women interacted with people and dressed and what they meant in Native culture, the Europeans perceived them to be more inherently sexual and barbarous than their European female counterparts. And therefore, it was okay to take these women in this way and assault them in this way. And that has kind of become ingrained in American culture that this is an acceptable way to behave towards a Native person. And I think that that also rings true for Native men and how Native men were perceived by the colonizers as being, you know, these brutish, unintelligent, animalistic type people. And that has become ingrained into American culture so much that people don't even question it when Native people are described in that way. And, you know, it is, you know, it's gone down in history books when, you know, and like I was, you know, doing some research once, and I was reading Captain Vancouver's diaries, like his personal diaries, and the way that he described the Indians was that, you know, basically described them as beautiful but animal-like. And that's very common in the way that they would describe Native people, as very beautiful, handsome people, but savage and brutish and animalistic. That's what is mostly recorded, especially considering most Native forms of writing were not considered forms of writing by Europeans, and that includes, like, wampum belts and calendar sticks and, you know, pictographic writing. That was not considered writing or civilized writing, and therefore not recorded as history, whereas the white recordings in English or French or Spanish or whatever were considered civilized writing and therefore recorded history. And you even see that within the field of history and anthropology, you know, the pre-contact North America is still referred to as prehistoric. But, you know, history didn't start when white people got here. There was, you know, thousands of years of history that existed before that. It was just recorded in a different way than Europeans were used to. And so that's why, I mean, a lot of people are trying to make the effort to shift the term prehistory to pre-contact, but you still hear that used I took a course in my graduate studies that was, North American prehistory. And so that's still definitely the, like, rhetoric of, you know, scholarly fields and not scholarly fields to refer to pre-contact North America.
We'll continue with the rest of this interview after a message from Paul and Mike.
Hey, what's happening, people out there in Radio Land, in Portland, in the surrounding area, in the region, and all around the world listening to KBOO.FM. This is really good stuff that we're hearing Ms. Regan talk about. Basically, the collective subconscious that allows the types of oppression and brutality, whether carried out physically through actual acts of physical violence or supported systemically through people accepting and making things normative and the status quo, that are actually unacceptable. And the condition that creates in people who embody that way of thinking and then don't even recognize that they're thinking that way and the lack of accountability that follows. And so it continues. But where else are you going to hear about that? But KBOO, 90.7 FM, right? You know, KBOO.FM. And it's because we bring you that type of information that I know speaks to a lot of us because it resonates in you in a way that you're not going to get anywhere else on the dial. We want you to call. Because of that, we want you to call 877-500-5266. We want you to stroll on down, drive on down, ride your Segway, your unicycle, get beamed down from the spaceship you're on, and come to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Say hello. And Paul, what's up?
Well, you know, Mike, I just, you know, the theme of a cultural appropriation and just the total disrespect shown, and just the unwillingness to grapple with the fact that it's disrespectful, the use of Native masketry and stuff. But let's just give, before I continue, let's just give that number 877-500-5266. This is real talk that you're hearing here on KBOO. And this is real. Everybody, we live in this money economy, and we need to keep this station going. It's real. This is really important. We all realize what's going on. But I just want to say, Jackie Keeler, who lives here in the Portland area now, has been on this program a bunch of times, and has been really leading. One of the leaders of this fight against the cultural appropriation. And this is a really important place to hear about this stuff. Rose City Native Radio has brought you a lot of these voices. They're really carrying on this really, really important work. So I think I just think it's important that people acknowledge that. And one way to acknowledge that directly right now, right here, is to call 877-500-5266.
And if you want to appropriate, and when I say you, I'm talking about the dominant culture set. If you want to appropriate the features and aspects of First Nations culture, of original people's culture, of indigenous people's culture, then go ahead and take it all and appropriate the aspect of it that's more communal and less predatory and parasitic. And one way you can do that and complete the circle fully is by giving back and being a contributor and an active part of your community and contribute to KBOO. Keep us bringing you this type of programming. Once again, 877-500-5266, KBOO.FM. Back to y'all.
Has there been much of an attempt to recover the pre-contact history?
Yes, there has. And ethnohistory is kind of a marriage between anthropology and history because if, say, I wanted to go out and do a, study on Cahokia at the time of its, the height of its civilization, in which I think was around 1200, which if anyone's unfamiliar with Cahokia was a city outside of where is now St. Louis. And it was actually the largest city in North America, even after it was no longer populated. No city in North America surpassed it in population until the 1800s. And it was a very, very large city and a large, bustling commerce center for, it was right on the Mississippi. So it was a very large center. So say I wanted to do a research project on Cahokia and I wanted to, write about the history of Cahokia at the time that it was, highly populated. There's not going to be a lot of historical texts recording the history of Cahokia at that time because it was either, destroyed by European contact, or it was, not counted as history and not recorded. And so I'm going to have to look into anthropology and archaeology in order to piece together the history of this city. So that the field of ethnohistory was actually established for Native American history in the 1970s. A commission was brought together to bring broken treaties before the federal government, and the Native groups were allowed to lay their claims out before the government and say, this is the claim that we're making, this is why it was broken, this is how it was broken. And they needed experts to be able to testify and say, that these people are correct and that this treaty was broken and here's the history of this area. And so the field of ethnohistory was born out of that to study Native history.
So another symptom of that is this divide and conquer method, with the border lines being drawn. I know it's happened with your tribe, the Apache tribe. It's happened with my tribe. I'm Pima and Yaqui, and we have reservations on both sides of the borders.
I mean, that's definitely something that my tribe experiences, because our traditional lands are on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border. And, you know, Canadian natives, I have a good friend who is Ojibwe, and they are under the Jay Treaty, where they are allowed to travel back and forth between the United States and Mexico, or not Mexico, I'm sorry, United States and Canada. And, you know, they show their card at the border and they're able to cross, whereas, you know, Southern natives don't get that. And when they drew this border, which for my tribe didn't exist until the 1840s, it even divided families. You know, I have family that was born on the Mexico side of the border, and I have family that was born on the American side of the border. I, you know, just curious for my own self, was doing some, you know, genealogical searching online, and, you know, was able to find, you know, my great-grandmother's census records, and she's listed as Mexican. And she was Apache, and she was born in Mexico, and therefore, in the eyes of the American government, she was not Native. She was Mexican. And so that's something that, you know, I'm also people who would travel regularly on both sides of their own land, you know, they're forced to stay on one side or the other. And which I know that's definitely something for the Pima, you know, the Oodham Reservation is on the border. And I know people do experience a lot of difficulties, even traveling back and forth on their own reservation to visit family or on one side or the other because of this imaginary line. That's also something that you see, you know, with, you know, the historical texts. You know, once this line was drawn, the people, you know, are considered something else than they really were. And, you know, it's one thing that I like to make sure people know is, you know, like, if it weren't for the Mexican-American War, you know, California and Arizona, New Mexico and Texas would still be part of Mexico, unless, you know, some other unforeseeable imaginary event were to have taken place. And so, you know, these borders do shift all the time. Even still in other parts of the world, these borders are moving and, you know, people are being told, well, you're not in this country anymore, you're in this one. And so you can't necessarily make somebody, you know, make a claim to somebody's heritage based on where they were born when it comes to that kind of thing, particularly with, you know, indigenous people. And one phrase that I've seen before and I really like is that we didn't cross the border crossed us.
So what would you say to any Native youth listening who may be interested in getting involved in history or even just looking for, you know, history from an Indigenous point of view?
I would say that, of course, to go for it because history is awesome. You know, I would say to anybody who is interested, you know, you're fortunate out there in Oregon to have some very good universities with very good history departments. And also in California, one of the only universities to offer an actual PhD in Native studies is UC Davis. And I think the other one is North Carolina and Oklahoma. So there's only three in the entire country that actually offer the Native Studies PhD. You know, definitely to get out there and to question what you're reading, question where's this perspective. And what, you know, when you're reading a historical text, a lot of people, you know, recommend to look at the footnotes, look at the endnotes. Where did they get their sources from? You know, and look at the original sources. Look at these, you know, documents. And thankfully, with, you know, the age that we live in, we have the internet. And there are so many, I mean, of course, there's so many things out there on the internet that are totally just crazy. But when there are so many, like, universities and libraries that have online archives that people can have access to, and databases that people can have access to research, you know, these archived documents. And, you know, that's one thing that historians, you know, we spend a lot of time in archives and we spend a lot of time reading old documents. And we're very fortunate to, you know, be living in a modern age where we have access to these documents from just about anywhere in the world. And, you know, I know that I've definitely taken advantage of that in my own research with some archives in Mexico and part of in a university in Texas that have these archived documents that I'm able to go in and look at either transcribed documents or the actual original document and, you know, read the original text of what this explorer wrote about this. And, you know, the Spanish were very meticulous in what they recorded. I mean, they would write, you know, today we walked 5 miles and Jose stubbed his toe. Like, they were very meticulous in everything that they did and recording. And so, you know, get on these archives and do some research on your own and, you know, learn to question what you're reading and where the sources came from and where, you know, what this perspective of the person is, because every historian is going to include their own perspective and their own biases, even if they're doing it consciously or not, into what they're writing. So question that and look at that and you know, make decisions and, you know, for your own, and look at, you know, all sides of a story and all perspectives of a story to really, you know, gain an understanding about the actual history of an event or a location.
And that is the end of part one of our two-part series interview with Laura Reagan. And here is a message from our friendly volunteers here at KBOO.
And you are listening to Rose City Native. And we also heard a interview with Jackie and Laura Reagan. And this is the type of public affairs that KBOO always seeks to do, is make sure that we bring you hard-hitting, cutting-edge information that you don't always hear on commercial radio. I'm Sequoina.
And I'm Paul.
And we're here to let you know that we are asking for your money. That's right, your hard-earned dollars and cents to donate to a wonderful radio station. And you can do that right now by dialing 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266. Or you can always come down and meet some of our volunteers and our staff and at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and make your pledge today in person.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Why wait? You know, you've heard that number before. You'll probably hear it again. But call right now.
Till October 10th.
Don't delay. But I do want to thank all the restaurants who are supporting this membership drive, among whom for today are Bread and Ink Cafe at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne, open 7 days a week, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Bridges Cafe, 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, open Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And Cabazon at 5200 Northeast Sacramento, open for dinner 7 nights a week, 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. We're thanking them because they are supporting us, and you can support us in your own way. There are many ways to support KBOO. I am a volunteer. Sequoina's a volunteer.
That's right.
Jackie and Dell, who are in the air room right now, are volunteers.
Dell. Hey, I give money to KBOO.
Oh, okay.
I volunteer and give money.
Okay, okay. Don't get mad at us.
Do I get brownie points?
Yes.
I did that once.
People, we need you to donate too.
I did a couple of times. But you know, as Paul said, he's a volunteer and I'm a volunteer as well. And we do a lot of work here at KBOO, and we enjoy this radio station because we know how important it is in the community. And so because of that, we give a lot of work. We may not give a lot of money, but we will at least give a lot of work. And it does take a lot of work to make sure that radio is, or community radio rather, is going through your eardrums. So help us continue to do that by going to kboo.fm, click on the tip jar, donate your hard-earned dollars and cents that way, or you can call 877-500-5266. We have a small paid staff and a very large group of music lovers, news, and public affair writers and producers, all volunteered from our community, sharing their passions. And so if we do that, if we continue to do that, it will be because you gave your support for a great radio community radio station. Please help us and continue to do that by dialing 877-500-5266. What's that number again, Paul?
877-500-5266.
Paul, what happened?
Paul's changed
his
voice.
Hello? Paul, where is he? Oh, I guess he's Dell now.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I donate because I can afford to donate, right?
Nice.
And I can afford to donate my time, but also I get a lot out of the time that I donate here. But also, you know, I'm in a position where I can do that. And maybe other people's are not, right?
That's right.
But I know that many of you listening right now are in a position that you can actually share some of your hard-earned dollars.
That's right.
Right?
Yes. And by sharing your hard-earned dollars, you are sharing in an investment in a great radio station that invests in you. So help us be invested. Invest your time. Invest your dollars. Do whatever you can. Help us stay growing strong for almost 50 years. 877-500-5266. Again, you can also come down to our radio station if you are just getting off of work and you're like, I don't really want to go home yet. I want to hang out. Well, come hang out with us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Meet some of the volunteers, meet some of the staff, meet some of the folks here that keep this radio station going for pennies on the dollar, or less than pennies. Whatever. 877-500-5266. That is, those are the hot numbers to dial. 877-500-5266. Make it happen right now. And if you do that now, you will, like I said, be putting in your investment. You invest in coffee, right? Every day. You invest in, you invest in a lot of important things. Don't you think KBOO's important? You're listening to us right now. We have to be important to get the most local, national, and international news and public affairs and music. 877-500-5266 are the hot little numbers to dial. 877-500-5266. Do it right now.
You're listening to Rose City Native Radio here on KBOO Portland. We have... we have some community calendar events over here. Let's see. We have tomorrow, October 3rd, is the Bow and Arrow Gathering at NEA, which is a potluck at 6:30 p.m. At NEA, which is at 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard. And then October 13th, Stories of Home, an Indigenous Journey at PSU Native American Student Center, 710 Southwest Jackson Street. Again, that's October 13th, 5 to 8 p.m. It is a workshop to explore connections between social justice and creativity in honoring Indigenous identities and stories of home. October 22nd at NEA, there is a screening of Young Lakota and a panel discussion afterwards, 5:30 to 8 p.m. in honor of Domestic Violence Awareness Month. That is at NEA, 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard. And also on October 22nd, Winona LaDuke will be speaking at the PSU Smith Student Union Ballroom at 7 p.m. October 8th through the 12th is the 9th annual Northwest Indian Storytelling Festival at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at brownpapertickets.com. So, you know, we've heard a lot from our fellow volunteers here at KBOO and asking you to donate what you can. I am laying out the blanket to you, Indian Country. Please, a dollar, whatever pocket change you got, for the price of a piece of fry bread at a powwow, you can help support community radio and the station. If you like what you hear, if you think what I'm doing is a good job, and I really hope you guys do, you know, any little bit helps really to keep this going. We need to get the voice of Indian Country out there, and this station has been nothing but amazing in supporting this show and others like it. So if you're also social media buff, you can find us on Twitter at KBOO. Send us your thoughts, supports, and questions there. Also follow our page on Facebook for the latest updates and great giveaways during the drive. That's at KBOO on Facebook as well. And in the Twitter search, search for hashtag support KBOO and read great treats from our supporters. If you would like more information on this show with updates on what we'll be doing, you can find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio. We now have a new Instagram. If you want to see behind the scenes look at how this show is made and the crazy people behind it, go ahead and like us on Instagram, follow us on Instagram, whatever the kids are saying these days. Rose City Native Radio on Instagram. If you know of any local Native events, or if you think there's a topic that we should cover, or if you just like to tell us, you know, what you think of the show, email us at pdxnativeradio@gmail.com. I'm Jackie Malmstrom, and thanks for listening, Indian Country. I'll see you next week. Hey, oh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard around the world at www.kboo.fm. The time is 6:59. Stay tuned for Ear to the Streets of Portland coming up in this special fun drive, membership fun drive, right here on your community radio station, KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a talk by Jeff Clements, Corporations Are Not People, which takes place at the First Unitarian Church in Portland on Friday, October 10th at 6:30 p.m. Jeff Clements is founder of Free Speech for People and author of the book Corporations Are Not People. Again, that's Jeff Clements, Friday, October 10th at 6:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, a blast from the past, a little tidbit from the KBOO archives.
All the world is a stage. I know that's an old cliche, but how true most of the time. My world is the stage. I'm Darcel 15, female impersonator. Entertainment, information, world affairs are my business. To continue KBOO's business, they need your support. Pledge what you can and keep the entertainment, information, and world affairs on KBOO.
Listen, my friends, as I tell you, the spark that will fly, the spark that will fly, listen, my,
ear to the streets, 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 ear to the streets,